Welcome to this Friday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In the show today, Taylor Charleston will be along. He'll have a report on wildfire smoke safety regulations for ag employers and employees. And I'll have a look at regional and national agricultural news, beginning with regional ag news right after this.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
USDA has announced a new federal program that will create more opportunities for small farmers in the Sacramento Valley hit hard by the pandemic by helping them to connect with food banks and in turn increasing the quality of food on the dinner table. U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack visited the Yolo County Food Bank recently to announce California will receive $43.4 million for the United States Department of Agriculture's local food purchasing program. He said farmers and families will benefit. The Yolo Food Bank serves more than 12,000 and food insecure families a month. While he toured the food bank, Vilsack said the pandemic hurt not only more families, but those small-scale farmers trying to make a living. The USDA money will go to food banks and other community programs that buy the farmers' produce and distribute it to those in need. There are 23 states participating in the program. California received the largest amount of money in the $400 million program. California-based Driscoll's is announcing its Berry Mobile Tour across the northeastern U.S., including stops in New York and Boston, as part of its Sweetness Worth Sharing campaign. Berry lovers in these areas can enjoy free delicious berry treats, fun photo opportunities, and more to create memories and form special moments of connection with the berries. Driscoll's Sweetness Worth Sharing campaign continues to build on emotional brand differentiation across multiple integrated touchpoints in person, on social media, and beyond, according to Jamie Bassman, Senior Brand Manager at Driscoll's. As a multi-sensory experimental activation, the Berry Mobile Tour allows them to connect directly with their consumers in a fun and memorable way. Zespri, the world's largest marketer of kiwi fruit, selling in over 50 countries, is partnering with Stockholm-based recycling startup Bauer to let consumers make money from recycling. Across the entirety of the U.S., Zespri customers will be able to use the Bauer app to recycle packaging, earning $1.50 when they do so. The U.S. recycling rate has declined in recent years from around 9% in 2018 to 5% at its lowest in 2021, according to Reuters News. Working with major organizations such as Coca-Cola, Johnson & Johnson, and P&G, Bauer rewards users with points that can be exchanged for money, discounts, or coupons when they recycle everyday packaging. The app is free to download and available across the U.S. By downloading the Bauer app, scanning the barcode of any Zespri product, including Zespri SunGold, Zespri Green, and Zespri Organic, and depositing the packaging at a recycling point found either already on the Bauer system or when they register themselves, users will be credited $1.50. They will then be able to withdraw this money to a bank account or donate it to charity. Festival Napa Valley raised a record-setting $3.75 million at its Arts for All Gala on Sunday, July 17th. Proceeds from the event provide free and affordable access to festival concerts, inspiring educational programs and original programming for youth, and scholarships for talented young artists. Held under a grand tent at Oakville's Nickel, the gala evening was headlined by Grammy Award winner Trisha Yearwood. Guests enjoyed a lavish dinner by celebrity chef Tyler Florence. A live auction was held by Emmy Award-winning auctioneer John Curley and featured a collection of once-in-a-lifetime luxury lots, most of which included wines from Napa Valley and other regions. In an update from Produce IQ, prices continue to intensify for what has already been one of the most expensive years for orange buyers. A challenging winter season for domestic growers was only the opening act for an equally exasperating summer season. Prices typically climb in the summer months as domestic availability of the citrus thins, but this year a lower supply of Chilean fruit is adding pressure to an already overextended market. Prices may stabilize if Chilean growers can increase production, though forecasts are not optimistic. Prices are at record levels. Size 88s in the West shipping point is over $24 a case. And strawberry volume out of Northern California declined for the fourth straight week. Prices are on a rise. They're up 17% to $10. Overall volume typically falls post week number 25 as domestic supply weakens through the end of the year. Blueberry prices are stalling as supply marginally improves. However, increased volume is still not enough to meet demand. Minnesota has delayed harvest due to rainy conditions. A gap in California's raspberry and blackberry production is causing markets to firm up. As a result, raspberry prices are up 10% and blackberry prices are up a modest 2%. Expect all berry markets to remain tight for the next few weeks. And there is a silver lining for potato buyers. Supply can only improve from here on out. At least that is what is expected. Russell prices are climbing as supply dwindles into oblivion. As for squash, prices are down another 5% over the previous week due to increased local availability. The summer heat is a good thing for squash promotion. California's Oak Fire has burned more than 18,000 acres in the days since it ignited near Yosemite National Park on July 22nd. According to the U.S. Drought Monitor, 90% of Mariposa and Madera counties are currently experiencing exceptional drought, which is the most severe category on the scale. By recent standards, both of these ongoing fires are actually on the small side, that according to UCLA climatologist Daniel Swain. He says winds have been pretty weak and typical for this time of the year, but the Oak Fire has still managed to evade control due to extreme vegetation dryness over the long term and hot conditions in the short term.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
Wildfire smoke is composed of harmful chemicals and tiny particles suspended in the air that presents a significant health hazard for workers exposed to it. These particles can irritate the lungs and cause serious or even fatal health effects, such as reduced lung function, bronchitis, worsening of asthma, or even heart failure. Employers in the agriculture industry, as well as employees themselves, must comply under the California Code of Regulations, Title 8, Section 5141.1, for wildfire smoke exposure. David Hornung is CalOSHA's subject matter expert when it comes to wildfire regulations and protocols.
So when wildfire smoke might affect a work site, employers must monitor the air quality index for fine particulate matter that's referred to as PM2.5. You have to do that before and throughout the work shift. It's really easy to track air quality index, often called AQI, using websites like EPA's Air Now, or your local air quality management district will have AQI readings. Even nowadays, it's easy to get on the phone, like the iPhone weather app will actually tell you AQI as well, but those official sources are probably best. Ag workers can also ask their employer what the air quality index is, or go to the websites I just mentioned and check for themselves if they're concerned that the air could be unhealthy due to wildfire smoke. Ideally, employers could move their operations to a location where the air is less harmful, but we know that that's very difficult in agriculture. But if the air is unhealthy due to wildfire smoke, that employers must provide and encourage their employees to use proper respiratory protection, such as N95 respirators. If the employer, again, cannot move operations to an area where air is adequately filtered and they don't have access to respiratory protection, then they may need to halt operations until the outdoor air quality improves.
In reference to respiratory protective equipment, employers must be providing these particulate respirators, such as N95 masks.
When the air quality index is worse than 151, so it's 151 or higher, the employer needs to not only provide N95 masks to the workers, but encourage their use. N95 is the most common type of filtering face piece respirator that you'll see. So it's a little more than just like a face covering, like we've seen a lot in COVID. These are actually going to be certified by NIOSH. There are a couple respirators that are more protective than N95. They're called N99s or P99s or P100s, but they're pretty rare, and I think you won't see them much.
The wildfire smoke regulation is no different from any other law in the sense that violations pose consequences to an employer's business and to the health of their employees. If there's any safety regulation to not violate, this is probably one of them.
First, I want to remind employers that Cal OSHA has a lot of free resources available to help their business understand and comply with this new wildfire smoke regulations. Those resources can be found on Cal OSHA's Worker Safety and Health in Wildfire Regions webpage. And it contains information on the training and instruction that's required to be provided both in English and Spanish, as well as it contains fact sheets, FAQs, and training videos. In addition to those, our consultation services unit will provide free review of employers' programs and protocols to help protect workers. But if those don't work, in the event that a Cal OSHA inspector shows up at the work site and the employer is found to be in violation of the regulation, Cal OSHA may issue a citation to the employer that requires the employer to correct the violation. For instance, if Cal OSHA shows up to a work site where there's a wildfire smoke in the area, we'd make sure that the employer has a plan in place to ensure the workers are aware of the hazards of wildfire smoke and the ways that they can protect themselves, including the use of N95s. Again, Cal OSHA has a lot of resources available to help employers ensure they're keeping their workers safe.
This is also a law that doesn't directly apply to employees. Employees cannot get cited for breaking health regulations. It's entirely up to the employer.
Cal OSHA does not issue citations or fines to employees. It puts the requirements of the regulations on the employer. Of course, the employees do have a role in this. They're going to want to listen to the training and instruction provided, and they're going to want to keep themselves safe and ensure that they use those N95 masks when the air quality is bad due to wildfire smoke.
Every year, Cal OSHA releases its top 10 most cited violations, as well as the money that was cited towards those violations. Thankfully, last year, Hornung said that wildfire smoke violations did not crack the top 10, but Cal OSHA is still concerned.
We know that 2020 and 2021 were the worst wildfire seasons in California history in terms of acreage. Our hope is that this wildfire season is not as bad as previous years, but it very well could be. And that's why we have all these resources and we prepared all these resources for employers to make sure they know what the regulation is and how to comply with it so that Cal OSHA enforcement or inspector doesn't need to show up there. We don't get any complaints about it. Just to ensure that the employer is following the regulation.
For any questions on wildfire smoke regulations or any other rules that fall under the California Code of Regulations, visit www.dir.ca.gov. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns on September 28th and 29th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this two-day conference features two concurrent CE tracks for both PCAs and CCAs. Earn the DPR and CCA credits you need. Network on our trade show floor and join us in giving away scholarships and honorariums presented by Western Region CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Take advantage of early bird pricing for only $175. Price goes up after July 31st. Visit progressivecrop.com/conference.
While some agricultural groups have repeatedly stressed opposition to linking crop insurance premium incentives to conservation or climate change, the American Farmland Trust called on Congress to increase the synergies between crop insurance and conservation in the next farm bill. American Farmland Trust has released the group's recommendations for the next farm bill, focusing on expanding access to conservation programs, as well as programs that preserve farm ground from development through easements. Farm groups and Congress are gearing up for a farm bill debate with a current legislation set to expire at the end of September of 2023. Still, farm bills are often extended, sometimes multiple years, because Congress and White House are unable to agree on priorities. Chances are high that scenario will play out next year as well. Legislation called the Next Generation Fuels Act was introduced in both the Senate and the House of Representatives this week. It aims to leverage higher octane fuels to improve engine efficiency and performance. Allowing the sale of fuels with greater octane levels would increase the amount of ethanol that can get utilized in a fuel supply, which in turn would lower prices at the pump. Iowa Senators Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst introduced it in the Senate, while Illinois Representative Sherry Bustos and the entire Iowa delegation introduced it into the House. Unstable gas prices have left many families, and especially rural families, with a lot of budget uncertainty, according to Grassley. This would ramp up the use of homegrown fuel at stations across the country, making Americans less reliant on foreign oil and less vulnerable to OPEC tactics. Ernst echoed those sentiments, noting that America should be turning to its own abundant domestic fuel production. And USDA has just announced new investments in rural broadband projects. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
Millions of rural residents are being left behind in this internet age, and the administration and many lawmakers are working together to change that.
It starts with making sure rural communities are connected to affordable, reliable, high-speed internet.
White House Infrastructure Coordinator Mitch Landrieu telling a news conference it's a huge job, but it is being done bit by bit. The latest announcement on that coming Thursday from Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, who told reporters that through the USDA's ReConnect program, designed to bring high-speed internet to underserved communities,
$401 million is being announced today. That includes 20 projects in 11 states. All told, we expect about 31,000 families and businesses in these 11 states to benefit from this investment.
But this is just one of many ReConnect investments in the works.
So there's going to be a constant stream of projects being announced between now and, say, the first part of 2023.
And many more next year funded by the bipartisan infrastructure bill. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
South Dakota Senator John Thune is taking aim at a Securities and Exchange Commission proposed rule that could force farmers to keep an inventory of climate emissions. Thune argues the White House is trying to discourage firms through SEC and other agency rulemaking from investing in fossil fuels by forcing downstream reporting of climate emissions.
I've got small lenders in South Dakota, ag banks, credit unions, who are worried that this pressure is going to extend to them not to make loans to agricultural operations. Well, livestock emit methane, right?
So Thune has introduced a bill to require regulatory agencies to first meet an inflation test before imposing new rules that could drive up food and fuel costs.
If they would, in a period of inflation, add to inflationary pressures and raise the cost of those items, then they would be prevented from issuing those regulations.
Thune's bill would ban federal regulators from implementing any rule that would increase food or energy prices if inflation is higher than 4.5%. Inflation topped 9% in June, a four-decade high.
I think this legislation is something that would provide consumers some relief and prevent these overreaching, heavy-handed government regulations being imposed by agencies that are costing our American families dearly.
An American Farm Bureau Federation argued in May that the SEC rule would put a huge squeeze on small and medium-sized farms that don't have the time and money to keep track of every emission of methane or gallon of diesel used. Oil prices have moderated over the past couple of weeks, allowing fuel prices to flatten or even decrease in some states. Patrick DeHaan with Gas Buddy says concerns are growing about the state of the U.S. economy and a potential slowdown, which could curb fuel consumption.
That and an improvement in supply, gasoline inventories in the U.S. up for four out of the last 5 weeks, has contributed to the downdrafts that we're experiencing. And barring any unexpected outages or hurricanes and such, we could continue to see prices moderating for the next couple of weeks.
What sort of impact are Ukraine and COVID having on oil prices? DeHaan says those two issues are not active drivers of prices one way or another.
Russian invasion of Ukraine is partially the reason why diesel prices have seen such a significant gap to that of gasoline. That gap isn't really changing. I do expect diesel to moderate, but it likely will remain very high compared to gasoline. On the other hand, COVID-19 has played more of an active role in that it had limited refining capacity, U.S. refining capacity down about 1 million barrels a day compared to where it was in 2019, and that has curbed the ability for refineries to produce as much diesel as the market is looking for.
DeHaan says he's hopeful that U.S. consumers will continue to see oil prices moderate in the weeks ahead, but he notes that a lot of volatility remains on the international scene.
sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
Truckloads of wine grapes are trickling into wineries as harvest begins. In the coming weeks, harvest will kick into full swing, first with the white varieties in August and then with the reds in September, according to Jeff Bitter, president of Allied Grape Growers in Fresno. The season finishes up with ruby reds in the Central Valley in late October.
We're definitely going to be seeing more grape trucks rolling around by the first week of August. And then as we get into the middle of August, really when you start getting into the Pinot Grigio, White Zinfandel, Chardonnay crush with some volume. So that's when we'll really start to see some movement of grapes. And then, of course, as we move into September, during the early part of September, you'll have early reds that start to come off, such as Syrah, for example, is usually one of the first reds that's picked. And then we'll move on through other varieties, including Cabernet, and you also have Pinot Noir that comes off fairly early in September through the middle part of September. And then lastly, you kind of finish up with Ruby Reds in the Central Valley anyway, which is a late red variety that's used primarily for red grape juice concentrate. And that normally will start end of September, early October, and run for the entire month of October. So that's kind of how the harvest usually progresses by variety. And then during that entire time, usually August through September, you have, you know, grapes being crushed for generic programs, whether it's generic white or red. So varieties like Thompson Seedless and French Colombard that will be harvested pretty much all during August and September. So lots going on. There's definitely a big bubble during the month of September.
Geographically speaking, Bitter said harvest generally starts in the south and moves north, but it also depends on the varieties being grown and their suitability to the growing region.
For the most part, the harvest starts earlier in the south, in areas that are southern versus areas that are northern. But of course, it always depends on what is grown in certain areas. You know, some areas are better suited for late varieties and some for early varieties. So you may have areas that grow a lot of Pinot Grigio or Sauvignon Blanc, which might be, you know, earlier season, and others that are more suited for Cabernet Sauvignon and other reds that are later in the season. So it kind of depends on what's being grown specifically, but for the most part, you're going to work south to north in terms of harvest progression.
It may be a little early to proclaim a vintage 2022 year, but Bitter said the weather this season has not thrown any major curveballs at the crop. So far, he said he remains optimistic about harvesting a quality grape crop.
Quality is a very, very subjective kind of measurement, and it's really hard this early to make any major statements about quality. But I can tell you that with regard to the growing season that we've had and at the point that we're at now, the grapes look good. I mean, we have not battled, you know, inclement weather in terms of lots of rain or cold or heat. You know, the spring and summer have been fairly temperate. And so I think overall, we are in a good position to bring in a crop that would make good quality wine.
With harvest just starting, Bitter said it also may be too early to predict overall yields. Based on bunch counts conducted in the spring, he said they pointed to a potential for a crop slightly larger than last year. But the unknown is whether the individual berries sized up as expected. If he had to guess, Bitter said this year's crop will likely come in average or slightly below average.
Now on yields, we haven't brought in much yet to get a true gauge, but bunch counts in the spring were above average and probably above last year for sure, and probably slightly above like a five-year average. And so the crop potential was there. The question really is how much sizing is going to happen now that the grapes are going through and have gone through veraison during the month of July. Veraison is a time period where those berries go from a small hard berries to soft water or juice filled berries. And so that time period is when they also size up and can gain a lot of weight. And factors such as the heat will affect that. So if you have really unusually high heat during that time, that could retard the development and sizing of the berries. And so we're still kind of monitoring that. Right now, we don't think that the crop looks above average. it's probably average or less. If we had to make a guess, we'd say we might see less than 4 million tons crushed this year of wine grapes, which would be, you know, just slightly below an average crop. So it's a little early, but that's kind of our prognostication at this point.
How much impact the ongoing drought has on overall grape volume also is an unknown. In some of the hardest hit areas, Bitter said growers have only enough water to keep their vines alive, let alone size fruit.
Certain areas of the state are definitely water starved, and that does factor into crop size, particularly when it comes to sizing the crop after veraison. If you're, you know, cutting back the water during the months where it's the hottest, then you're certainly going to have a plant that this is struggling, you know, to survive and utilize that water for survival, not so much for sizing a crop. And so we're definitely seeing that in certain areas where growers are having to put on the minimum amount of water to, you know, keep their vineyard viable, but it's certainly not enough to maximize the crop potential.
In 2019 and 2020, demand for California wine grapes was soft, but Bitter said he's seen more demand for this year's crop. He attributed it to a more balanced market where there isn't an oversupply of grapes like a few years ago.
Demand is strong throughout the state if you compare it to what it's been, you know, in previous years. 19 and 20 were pretty weak in demand compared to this year. And so we're certainly seeing and experiencing a much more balanced marketplace where there's not a lot of spot market grapes available. Generally speaking, there's probably a little bit higher percentage of spot market grapes available in the coast than in the interior regions of the state. But overall, I'd say we're in pretty good shape market-wise.
Prices for this year's crop have strengthened, but Bitter said it's a bit deceiving. The higher grape prices are reflecting the higher costs of inputs and the higher costs to produce the crop, so growers likely won't see much of a net improvement.
Pricing has been strengthening, but part of that also is the fact that costs are going up considerably. And just like, you know, for consumers, costs are going up. The grocery store, at the pump, I mean, everywhere you look, things are more expensive. And so for farmers, that's the same thing. And those costs have to be passed along in order for the farmer to stay profitable. So certainly the market has helped us to increase prices the last couple of years, but there's also a necessity to increase prices just to cover costs. Grape prices might be up, but it does not mean that growers are more profitable today than they were 2 years ago because of the increased costs.
Just like the fast food chains and other businesses are scrambling to find workers, Bitter said agriculture is facing similar challenges. And in agriculture, it's not just about finding workers, but in many cases finding skilled workers to operate machinery, like mechanical wine grape harvesters. Even at some wineries, they've begun cross-training current workers to help out in the cellars during harvest.
The labor, you know, like everywhere, it's pretty tight right now. A lot of people looking for labor, whether it's, you know, fast food or service industries or whatever, there's definitely a shortage of labor or people willing to work. And so we're experiencing that in ag as well. And then, you know, there's a bigger question of even beyond that is skilled labor, you know, because there are a lot of jobs in ag that do require some skill and training, particularly with machine operation. And those types of things. So it's hard to get a full crew sometimes for harvest and running the machines, and even in the wineries for working in the cellar. There's been a lot of wineries that have already been doing training programs with other staff in the organization in order to bring them into the cellar during harvest because of potential labor shortages. So that's definitely something that we're feeling, and it's real.
It sounds like all things are pointing to possibly another vintage year. So let's raise our glasses and toast this year's wine grape harvest. This is Vicki Boyd reporting for My Ag Life.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.